This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Well, it's been well documented here in Northwest Indiana and across the Hoosier State that COVID-19 is disproportionately affecting black and brown communities, as has the systemic racism in policing as well. But there are other areas, too, that have these inequities, and one of them is in education. There's some major implications for Hoosier students and for leaders. And in higher education, there's some massive equity gaps that are still out there. Dr. Yolanda Watson is the president of Indianapolis-based Complete College America. They're a group that has a long history of being able to work to help trying to increase college completion rates and also to close the equity gaps nationwide. And she is with us today. Dr. Watson, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Hi, thank you.
Well, tell us first how you and your colleagues there at Complete College America see how COVID-19 seems to be making things worse for Hoosiers and minority students in particular that are trying to get their college degree.
Well, Complete College America is all about making sure that we look at colleges as the place that we can make a change. So as opposed to trying to make students college ready, we try to make colleges student ready. And so we try to make sure that because of the fact that colleges were not necessarily created for the students of today, that they understand what the needs of those students are and they can receive those students well. In COVID-19, it's very interesting. I mean, basically we've been in quarantine in some form or fashion since about, mid-March?
Yeah.
And so many students some students went to online, some students went to there being no school at all. And so depending on which institution you're talking about, if you didn't have a laptop, you didn't have Wi-Fi, then you really have missed school since mid-March. And so college completion is going to be very interesting if you weren't able to even access the curriculum.
I know. So these are students we're talking about that have just barely gotten technically through high school. In fact, they may not have even had a high school graduation ceremony because
That's
of
right.
the pandemic. It's hard to say. So there are all kinds of, as you say, the barriers that normally exist, but also the ones that got thrown up there, no thanks to the virus, to be sure.
Yeah, so think about this. If you were a student who you went to college, you have a work-study job on campus, right, and you're living in the dorm, and then someone said, we have to leave immediately, you lost your job on campus, you lost your stable home in your residential dorm, and now you're back in a home maybe with other children, other siblings. You may be in a place that's very small where you can't necessarily socially distance. You may be in a place where you can't access Wi-Fi because you're in a rural community. So for Hoosiers, there was a big issue. And now, if you're a high school student, let's go back there. If you're thinking about you're graduating from high school this year, besides not having a graduation, you may have lost education because you missed March, April, May, June, and now we're going into July. Yeah. Who knows if you'll be prepared for college in the fall.
Well, Dr. Watson, we have, of course, the latest news of the death of George Floyd and the demonstrations against racial injustice, not only the demonstrations in Indiana, but around the country and getting to be now almost around the world. How do you feel that these will all shape the culture that students will see on the college campuses this fall?
Well, I can tell you now, I know a lot of students are out protesting. They have been in the past couple of weeks. This is not going to let up, to be honest with you. They are angry. They feel like they want to be heard. And I guess if you think about it, protests in the 60s, these were young people that were out there. So it makes sense. I'm concerned because COVID-19 is still here. It has not gone away. And folks are protesting in the midst of other people, sometimes with masks, sometimes without masks, still in the midst of an international pandemic. So I think when you think about what the potential is for a return of the virus in terms of its virulence, it can be very, very deadly. So I'm just hopeful and prayerful that people are okay, first of all, health-wise. But also when you think about making their voices heard, I think it's important that students are able to be heard. When they look at what's happening in the world, they want to make a difference. But at the same time, going back to the first point you made, I think I'm just concerned about how we tie the physical part of having a protest with the academic part in terms of being able to be present on campus in the fall. We have no idea. Some colleges are saying we're completely online in the fall, and some are saying we're going to make sure that we can have some hybrid situation. So we don't know if these students will be okay when they even go back in the fall.
Now, in light of all of these factors that have seemed to be getting into the way, some of them, of course, with the pandemic, and some of them, of course, with the issues that have always been around but have cropped up most recently with racial injustice, how do you feel that Indiana colleges and universities can prepare this fall to help not only take care of the students, I guess, when they have them, but to help increase their retention and also be able to completion rates to boost them as well and better support those underserved and the marginalized students that are out there.
So I've been on many calls with Indiana universities, and I've heard, I mean, they have the plans together for the physical, like cleaning and making sure hand sanitizing stations are there. I think the biggest thing we're going to have to deal with, to be honest with you, is the emotional state of our students. And so making sure they have some place to go in terms of if they're having difficulty coping, making sure they have a place where they can talk with someone if they're having emotional issues. Suicide rates have been they've been rising over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And so just making sure we're checking in with how people are doing emotionally, if they're feeling that they're isolated, if they feel like they don't have any place to go. I think to make sure that students are being successful as people first and humans first is going to be the big deal, and making sure that we connect with them. So constant communication, constant connection, and helping them know that somebody is there for them is really the biggest piece for me, but even before the academic. Mm-hmm.
We brought up an awful lot here in our conversation that we've had. Is there any place in particular that people can go to online or find out other ways to get the information to deal with some of these issues we talked about today?
Yeah, sure. Please contact us at CompleteCollege.org. That's www.CompleteCollege.org. You can also follow me on Twitter at CCA Perez Yolanda.
Dr. Yolanda Watson, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for your time. Have a great day.
Dr. Yolanda Watson is the president of Indianapolis-based Complete College America. It's an organization that has a long history of working to increase college completion rates and to be able to close the equity gaps around the country. When is the right time to talk to children about racism? Do you maybe think that you don't have enough information or maybe even the right information? A lot of questions that might be in your mind before you start answering young person's questions about racism. And let's find out more about the topic. Tammy Silverman is the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. And she and her colleagues at IYI have been doing a lot of research. And you can find out more on their website, too, about this. But she's with us now. And Tammy, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Always my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it goes without saying that it can be difficult to talk with youngsters and with students, I guess, when they get past the young age about racism. What are some of the things that you all have learned and some of the data that's out there?
Well, like most things, we've learned that you need to think about the age of the child, right, that you're talking about, and you need to calibrate your conversations based on their age. That being said, we do know that the research is clear that we should start teaching children about kindness, fairness, human rights, all of those things that contribute to an anti-racist perspective at a young age. So don't, you know, part of our conversation is don't think that you can't have some of these conversations with very little children, including those under the age of 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are some of the things that maybe you should bring up when you do have that conversation first with a young person like that?
Well, with our little ones, we want to make sure that, you know, they often ask all of those questions. But why? But why? Why this? Why that? And, mm-hmm. you know, first and foremost, be open to all those questions. We know that even young children, even babies, start noticing physical differences, such as skin color. And they may ask many questions, and they'll ask why people look different. You want to encourage that curiosity and then put it in a positive pro-social response, right? Isn't that great that we all look a little different? Isn't that awesome? Yes, you're right that person's skin or hair color might look different than yours. And isn't that wonderful that we all look? And that's part of that next thing is to celebrate that diversity mm-hmm. and to introduce different cultures to little kids. And so those early positive interactions can really help shape how they view the world going forward.
And how about finding some people out there that can be good role models, experts even, I suppose?
Right, right. And again, that needs to be age appropriate. Who are these kids looking to? We know CNN and Sesame Street, I don't know if you had the chance to see it, recently partnered to do a town hall special on coming together. It was called Coming Together, Standing Up to Racism, which was extraordinary. And they engaged Big Bird and Elmo and all of these various folks and little kids asking their own questions. And so for a young person to hear it from in terms and phrases and from something that is from a creature, in this case, the Sesame Street characters that they consider an expert is really a great way to approach it.
Now, how about when you have young people that are in elementary school or even in middle school, what do you do when you want to approach them about the subject?
Well, this age, you have to ask them to talk a little bit more. You have to encourage them to share their feelings, particularly about race and racism. You need to check in on a regular basis and listen and ask those questions. They're likely kids in this group probably do have questions and concerns, and they may not know how to ask those or express those. Mm-hmm. And yet, you want to prompt those questions. This is a good time to talk about what they're seeing on TV and social media. They're becoming more exposed, and they can be confused by what they're seeing and hearing. And so, asking those questions: how did you feel about what we saw in the news? What did it make you think about? And then bring that diversity into your home and your school. So explore food, stories, films from a variety of cultures and ethnic backgrounds. And again, discussing how there's similarities and differences, and make sure that we're looking for experiences that are multicultural, multilingual, and that reflect the diversity of our state and our country.
Do you think that maybe at that age, they may be afraid of riots, maybe they're afraid of being hurt by the police or something of that nature?
They very much. You're absolutely right, Chris. And so you want to have those direct conversations and talk about, what that does look like. What are those possibilities? What is something they should be concerned about, and what they can possibly do to address that, right? And conversations that they can and should have with the caring adults in their lives.
All right, let's move on now to teenagers, those youngsters who may or may not have had some information already passed along to them from the classroom. What maybe should you be able to talk with them about, be ready to talk with them about when the questions come up?
Right. So this group, it's no surprise, teenagers have strong emotions, right? And so, the research is saying be ready for that, right? They're most likely to show anger and sadness. And it's important that you validate that it's good to have a strong reaction to social injustice. At the same time, you need to try to stay calm, right? Oftentimes, teens like to escalate conversations. You, as that caring adult, you stay calm and also share your feelings as well. It's important they can start to understand complicated histories and abstract concepts such as fairness, bias, justice. Start talking to them about systemic racism. Start expanding their understanding of global thinking, local impact, what that can look like. And this group also is ready to take some action. So they're often looking for ways to be active in their community and often on social media. So helping them think about ways to do that in a way that shows their dedication to inclusion and their own personal development is really important.
I know some of the organizations in Indianapolis of young people that are very very concerned about racial inequity and the like have gotten together, and they were in some of the latest series of demonstrations. So it's, yes, I guess, not beyond the realm of possibility that they get to some age, not quite to college age even, and they want to get out there and take some action.
You bet. And in several communities, we've seen high schoolers in particular actually organize the demonstrations in their communities. And so making space, coaching them on how to do that, and do you need a permit, or who do you need to ask, and mm-hmm. how are they going to do? But then giving them the space to lead that action is really important.
Now, we as the grown-ups, taking on these questions from the young people, what do we need to know how to do when it's time to answer some of the questions? What kind of role models do we need to be?
You know, first and foremost, do not worry if you do not have all the answers, right? And it's important to share with them, you're still learning and growing, and you're still trying to look for ways that you can increase your education. But then they're also looking for open, honest, fact-based conversations, right? So it's okay to say, I don't know that, but let's go see if we can find it out together. Let's look at how do we build that trust? They want to make sure they can come to you and that these are welcome and okay conversations, and that you're also showing them how you're challenging racist behaviors, practices, policies, that you're demonstrating that kindness that is so important that kids see us affording to every single person, mm-hmm. that we're treating everyone with dignity and respect.
I know there is one quote that you like to mention. It's from Dr. Carlin Tishner. Has some very wise words to say, in particular when we have these issues to deal with. If you can think of what that quote happens to be, I'd appreciate passing it along now.
Thank you. I do know it. And the quote is, "Our minority children deserve a world where they can run, walk, protest, and achieve without fear or limits. We all deserve this world."
Enough said. Tammy Silverman's president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, thank you as always for being with us today.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
All of my folks, my father and my mother's side, they were all from Florida, Gainesville, Alachua, Florida, all down there. Every summer, my mother packed us all up, you know, trunk, lunch, you know, the shoe boxes with the sandwiches and the fried chicken and the cake and everything, put us on the train, and we went to Florida every summer. We spent the summer in Florida. She never, until the day my mom died, she never got used to the winters in Gary. She hated it. I never wanted to go. I shouldn't say I never wanted to go. That's not true. As I started to get older, I didn't want to go because all my friends were here. But in Florida, as I said, it was always summertime. So my folks, you know, they had the fig trees and the things that you do when you're in a warm climate. But in Gary, when I first moved there, we didn't even have grass in our yard. The front yard was dirt, and we used to dig that dirt and put it in buckets and do all kinds of crazy things with it. But in Florida, I mean, you know, there was grass and there were fruit trees. And one year I went to Gainesville to see my grandmother, and I went by myself. When I got ready to get off the bus one night, the bus stopped somewhere. I got ready to get off the bus to go to the washroom, and there was this big sign, colored. I'm like, what? There was something about seeing an actual sign telling you, no, you cannot. There was a different feeling when I saw that sign. Here in Gary, we knew that the racism was existent because we knew the restaurant right down the corner from school we couldn't go to. It wasn't as overt, you know, the signs were not there. But this, when I saw this sign that said colored, I was like, oh my God. And as a matter of fact, I wanted a sandwich. I was told by other people on the bus that if you want a sandwich, you got to go around the back. And so I went around the back out of curiosity, and it was dark. The front of the, you know, where whites went, it was lit up, you know, really nice. And if you went around the back, it was really dark. And then I'm like, I don't want anything, you know, so I got back on the bus. The civil rights movement was not as big in Gary as it was in some as cities in the South. We knew that, you know, certain things were happening, changes were happening, but there was not the movement here in Gary that there was in other cities in the South. You know, the lunchroom counter demonstrations and those kinds of things. We used to say this was up South, and, you know, the other places were down South. I was involved with Rudolph Clay. He had an organization called the Claymates. I mean, I was beyond excited to see, you know, these congressmen and all these other people come to Gary for that Black National Convention. And Rudy had a booth, and we, my girlfriends and I don't even remember what we were selling. We were just there and so glad to be there and have an opportunity. Like, I remember meeting Conyers from Michigan, and I don't know how to explain it to you, but it was really a big deal. We were so excited. Yes.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Gary's mayor is supporting his fire chief in response to what the mayor had called a rash of ugly negative postings and whisperings in our firehouses. Those are the mayor's words that have challenged the fire chief's character. In a 10-minute online video yesterday, Mayor Jerome Prince addressed what he called a divisive social media campaign against Gary Fire Department Chief Sean O'Connell, who is white. Here is what Mayor Prince had to say and the fire chief he appointed had to say.
As I prepared to take office on January 1st this year, I spent a great deal of time building a team to help me lead the city of Gary. I considered each person's experiences, accomplishments, work records, and potential to do a job. I built a team of people who have strong, deep values that I share. I hired people who have demonstrated that they care about the city of Gary and who want best for every resident. I didn't investigate which school they attended or fraternity or sorority they belonged to, and quite frankly, I didn't consider the color of their skin, their ethnicity, or their appearance. The most important factor for me was the content of their character. This is a concept that, even though most are familiar with, as it was one of the salient points contained within Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, some people choose to completely dismiss its importance when they speak of other people. For too many people, the content of the character is just a phrase or a saying. For me, it's much more. The content of your character means how each person should be considered in every workplace, every government chamber, and every medical clinic and public space. When I selected Lieutenant Sean O'Donnell to lead the Gary Fire Department, I selected him because of his commitment to saving lives and property in the city of Gary, his experience, his record, and most importantly, his content of character. Those are the only factors that I needed. However, recently there has been a rash of ugly, negative postings on social media and whisperings in our firehouses. Apparently, there are people in the ranks of our fire department and in and out of positions of authority within the city of Gary who have decided to wrongfully judge others not by the content of their character, but by the factors that are not important to the work or their commitment to the city of Gary. Of course, there are going to be those who are seeking divide and not always so direct when they spew their poison. They would rather hide behind innuendo or cower behind clever wordplays to disparage people who have risked their lives time and time again to save other people. I've had a few conversations with some of those people, and apparently some did not understand my point. Let me be clear. We all enjoy a right to freedom of speech in this country and in this city. I would never try to deny anyone that right. Social media policies exist for the fire department just as we have policies for uniforms, attendance, and other issues in the department. And at the end of this, we will share a couple of those links on gary.gov for the general public and for any fire person or any personnel who wants to review them. Before I close, I'll add that for those of you in the Gary Fire Department or related to the department who are spreading vicious rumors and lies, enough is enough. You are harming the morale and the rank and file of the department and its leadership. You are creating divisions that can harm each other and the residents we are sworn to serve. You're also feeding into the disease that so many of us decry these days, and that is racism, one that has affected our country since the beginning. All of you put your lives on the line every time you answer a call, and it breaks the entire community's heart when our public safety men and women who are injured or worse. I know that you are capable of great courage in the face of great danger, but we must build on that courage, not tear people down on rumors and lies. If you hear or say someone trying to spread the disease of dissension, please say something. Politely confront the untruths, and please don't join in. I stand by Fire Chief O'Donnell and his leadership team and the content of all of their character, just as I stand by every woman and man in the Gary Fire Department. But we will no longer tolerate divisiveness or an agenda of hatred. At this time, I'd like to bring up Fire Chief Sean O'Donnell.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor Prince, for having me here today to address these concerns with the community and the fire department. I also want to thank my deputy chief, my command staff, my fellow firefighters, the local union president, and retired firefighters that are here today in support of me and my character. This issue was prompted by asking a firefighter to wear proper uniform attire. This has nothing to do with the content, nothing to do with the Black Firefighters Association, which is a wonderful group in which I support and have made that support known publicly as union president and also as fire chief. This all has to do with being in proper Gary Fire Department union attire. I've served the city of Gary for 22 years. All 22 have been served in fire suppression. I was honored when Mayor Prince asked me to become the chief of the Gary Fire Department. Mayor Prince conducted interviews of numerous members of the department besides myself. When Mayor Prince decided I would be the new chief, I was the elected president of the Firefighters Local 359. Previous to that, I was the elected vice president of the Firefighters Union. This election consists of all dues-paying members of the Fire Department Union, Local 359. I, as union president, did not campaign to be the chief of department. I recommended five other members of the department. I have served alongside some great firefighters and learned the job for some legendary firefighters. I proudly serve with some of the finest firefighters and EMTs and have been part of and witnessed numerous acts of courageous acts of selflessness. Our members have worked for many years with scarce resources. However, each and every day we go out and serve with pride. I myself still work right alongside my fellow firefighters along with the rest of my command staff. I am a firefighter first and foremost. This job is a passion and a calling to me and many others. It's the greatest job in the world. Recently, some of my brothers and sisters have taken up another calling. They went on social media and in our firehouses spreading vitriolic rhetoric about who they think should be the fire chief based on skin color, not character, and spreading a false narrative that I do not support the black culture and let other races do as they please. Those allegations are baseless. My first order as chief was updating our mission statement. The first line says our mission is to protect lives and property, and the last line says we provide a work environment that values wellness, cultural diversity, and is free from harassment and discrimination. Nowhere in the statement will you read we will pick and choose who we serve or who leads us based on color of their skin, ethnicity, politics, or any other factor. When I took this oath to serve, I promised to serve all members of the community. Never has a citizen said they do not want help based on skin color. The Gary Fire Department has written policies for social media, uniforms, and more, which will be shared. What we will not share is divisiveness, the anger and ulterior motives of some of our brothers and sisters have decided to spew. The Gary Fire Department is a diverse department that makes up the community we serve. Members have a right to their comments. However, you do not have the right to use your comments to dampen morale or to drive a wedge based on factors that have nothing to do with the content of character. In my 22 years in the GFD, my record is unblemished. I have never been the subject of a racial investigation or any other disciplinary matter. I've always prided myself on being part of this department and city. I've also participated, along with other members of the department and as union president, in doing activities in the city. Presently, I'm working with the Gary School Corporation to have an EMT program for high school juniors and seniors. This will give the students a skill when they graduate and also be ahead of the curve if they decide to become firefighters. I welcome all members of the department's point of view. If you can do this in a positive way and with respect. If you want to divide and tear us apart based on lies, rumors, and innuendos, maybe this is not the department or community you want to serve. In closing, I will continue to dedicate my life and career to serving the citizens of Gary and also the rank and file membership of our department and Honorable Mayor Jerome Prince and all city officials. Please do not hesitate to reach out to my office. Thank you.
I appreciate Fire Chief O'Donnell having the courage to address this issue head on. If there's any questions from the media coming in online, we'll certainly take them now. If not, I hope that this is the beginning to a reimagined fire department, a reimagined Gary, and certainly the beginning to the work that we started 6 months ago. Chief, thank you, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Now we've reached out to Tyrone Jackson Jr., the Gary firefighter who made the remarks on Facebook that the mayor's comments were referring to, and we hope to be able to bring you his side of the story on tomorrow's program. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks very much for being with us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.